time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Thank you, Jim Conde. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. Nice day out there today. Boy, it was cold this morning, though, again, wasn't it? This is getting a little old. Coming up on the program today, we're broadcasting live at the State House in Montpelier, as we do on Fridays during the session. We'll be here today. Next week, the lawmakers will be off. It is town meeting week. So this is somewhat of a symbolic halfway point here in this session, not really by the calendar, but I think more mentally. So we're going to chat about where things stand here, what actual progress has been made here since lawmakers came back here in January. We have a great lineup of folks joining us on the program today. In our second hour, we'll talk with some representatives of the beverage industry who are opposing the sugar-sweetened beverage tax. Also, we'll talk with some representatives of a coalition for the medically uninsured. Governor Shumlin is out of town today. He's down in Brattleboro, so he will not be joining us on the program. Later this hour, we'll catch up with the Senate Majority Leader, Phil Baruth, and we'll be taking your phone calls throughout the program as well. We'd love to hear from you. Don't think because we're out on the road that it makes any difference in terms of your ability to get on the program. Call us at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. And you can also reach us on our toll-free lines at 877-291-8255. We begin this morning. There's no issue, I think, that has dominated discussion here in the building more than perhaps maybe closing the budget gap. But another big issue is property tax reform. And let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome to the chair of the House Education Committee, Representative Dave Sharp, who is going to tell us here what his committee's been up to and the bill that they passed out and how it's going to save us all some money. Dave, thanks for joining us. How are you this morning?
I'm good. You know, walking out the door, it was 6 below 0, and I couldn't tell whether that was warmer or colder.
Yeah, it is amazing.
It's incredible.
You know, and when it's 20, you feel like you should be out there in a T-shirt, which, you know, a couple of months from now will seem freezing. It is amazing what the body can take, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. So we started out the session with a clear message from taxpayers that we had to do a better job with regard to education, and we had to do it for less money. We started out, we have a great education committee that has taken responsibility over the education fund as well as education policy. And we've worked diligently since the first day to put together a comprehensive education bill that we were able to vote out of committee 11-0, 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon.
Let's talk about some of the highlights of this. What would you describe as the highlights of this?
So one of the most important things is a structural change in how we do education. So if we were designing from scratch an education system to educate 90,000 Vermont students, would we create 300 school districts, over 1,400 school board members spread across the state? I don't think we would. And so what we've and many of the suggestions that came into the speaker were about larger school districts. So we moved in that direction. Integrated educational systems, pre-K through 12 of at least 1,000 students is our goal. And we put provisions in their voluntary process to go through for communities with expectation that the Agency of Education will provide expertise and help in moving in that direction, and tax incentives for a glide path, because when we create one school district out of many, all those many school districts have different tax rates, so we need to have a glide path to get them all to the same tax rate as painlessly as possible. We believe that it will save money, and it will create educational efficiencies that will allow better opportunities for Vermont children.
25 to 50 million, you think it's going to save?
That's what JFO is guesstimating. He was very iffy in his projections. He had used two or three different methodologies that ranged from 25 to 50 million.
So where's the money saved? Where's the 25 to 50 million coming from?
The business managers testified twice to our committee, and in both times indicated that there were substantial savings to be made just in the business practices. The business manager from the Essex area talked about, you know, how they buy fuel together. But the bookkeeping aspects of buying fuel together meant that he had to move money from each school district to a central pot of money and then write a check and then report, basically maintain six sets of books. And he felt that, you know, if that district were to form one single school district, that he could immediately reduce his staff by three people. And so there are those immediate just sort of bookkeeping or business practice savings involved. And then we also believe that there'll be efficiencies in how schools are run. We have taken testimony that kids are bused past one school to get to another school, and that we have half-empty schools that, you know, if a single school district were able to better manage the entire school district, they could deliver better educational opportunities to students with less personnel.
This the bill that you're talking about that passed out of the committee yesterday would require districts that would have to be a minimum of 1,100. So how many, I guess, what percentage of students in Vermont will be affected by this? How many districts are we talking about? More than half? Three quarters of them? What are we talking about?
I really don't know the number. I think it's more than half, but I don't know the number.
Okay. So this is primarily going to, I mean, obviously, this is primarily going to go after smaller districts in rural communities. Right or not?
Yes, but I think there are some opportunities in larger communities, too. I know that Burlington and Winooski, for example, have been working together collaboratively already, and there may be some conversation about having that be one school district, or there even have been conversations of South Burlington, Burlington, and Winooski being one school district. So I don't think the opportunities for improvement are limited to just the rural communities.
Okay. Realistically, South Burlington and Burlington making into one district, that would be huge.
It would be. But remember, 90,000 students, all the students in the state of Vermont is smaller than most school districts in the country. So we think of it as being huge, having those three communities together, but they're actually sort of medium size. In fact, I went to a lecture at UVM several years ago where a knowledgeable person whose name I've forgotten gave quite a good lecture with significant evidence that districts as enlarging districts up to 1,700 pupils created significant efficiencies.
This bill talks about, you were mentioning consolidation. There seems to be some encouragement, a voluntary effort here initially, but that changes at some point, right?
Yes, it does. If communities are not able to, don't make the effort, or are not able to come together, then the Agency of Education is charged with the responsibility to go into the region, talk to all the stakeholders, the school boards, the select boards, and people in various communities, and design a school system that works for that region.
Okay. How long do communities have before that action happens?
3 years. So there's a pretty generous time frame, I think, for this this voluntary process to be happening. And I'm certain that, you know, if they're close at the end of 3 years, that the agency will, you know, keep their hands off and let the process complete.
Another big part of this bill would cap spending at an increase of 2%. How did you come up with that? How would that work?
We heard from taxpayers clearly that spending was part of the problem, and that we looked at various mechanisms to control spending. We have a high spending threshold in place that's actually worked pretty effectively, but we needed to do more. And so what we put in place was a 2% increase in per pupil spending for districts across the state.
Okay. And that's blanket everybody.
That's blanket everybody.
All right. So if you're, well, I mean, is 2% the same across the state here? I mean, really?
No. You know, that we looked at nuances. There were two or three different ways to tier the cap so that schools that are already better have a better teacher pupil ratio or already spending, you know, less than the average would not have such a severe cap, and whereas schools that had a lousy teacher to student ratio, and we're spending a lot of extra money would have a more severe cap. But they didn't pass muster in our committee, so we passed it out with a simple flat cap. The bill is going to the Ways and Means. That's a committee that actually has expertise around fashioning this cap so that it better suits the state, and I have no doubt that they'll take a close look at this.
Does this bill in any way draw a closer connection between what people spend in their community and what comes out of their pocket? Because there's, that's the complaint that disconnect has happened.
We tried to make this connection a little clearer. In the bill, we fix state tax rates. One of the interesting things about taxes in the state taxes for generations, we set a state tax, and the economists tell us how much money that's going to raise. For example, we have a sales tax of 6%, and the economists come in January and they say, well, that 6% is going to raise X number of million. I think it's around 350 million. And then our spending has to be within that box. How do we figure out how to serve Vermonters within that box? Local taxes, municipal taxes, for generations have been exactly the opposite. People go to their town meeting and they vote a budget. And then they tell the select board members, you figure out what tax rate to peg in order to raise that amount of money. And when we created Act 60, we meaning the legislature, we brought the municipal methodology into the state. So voters across the state vote a budget. And then, like the select board, the legislature is charged with finding the rates to pay for that budget. So when the rates were going down, everybody thought that was wonderful, and the legislature was cutting taxes. We weren't really. All we were doing was setting the tax rate to raise the voted amount. And now with tax rates going up, the devil has been the legislature, but likewise, all we're doing is setting rates necessary to raise the amount of voted budgets. So we've changed the methodology, and we've fixed the state tax rates. They're fixed at $1 per $100 value of property, 2% on the income, and the ratio between the two for the non-residential properties. So the letter from the commissioner of taxes in December is going to give us one number, and that number is how much per pupil those taxes raise. Let's say it's $10,000 next year. The communities then know that if they spend $15,000 per pupil, they're going to pay 50% more in their taxes. And it'll be much clearer and straightforward. And furthermore, we're having the per pupil, we're changing the ballot language so that the ballot that people vote on
right.
on town meeting day won't be the gross budget, which is
irrelevant.
It's irrelevant. It's not
right.
representative of what the taxes will be. So the per pupil costs are going to be on that ballot language. So voters will be able to see it's up 5%, it's down 5%, whatever the number is in their community, and they'll know directly how that affects their taxes.
The gross number will be on there too?
Yes.
Is it going to be both?
Yes, a full budget, $20 million representing, $14,000 per pupil, which is up 5% from last year, something to that effect. The language is specific in the bill.
Maybe put these on. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll free, 877-291-8255. We're talking with Representative David Sharp. He's the chair of the House Education Committee. Yesterday, they voted at a education bill out of their committee. Let's go to Williamstown. Good morning, Rama.
Yes, good morning, Representative Sharp and Mark. Two quick comments on the House Bill 361, the one that just came out of the Ed Committee. But first, I want to point out that having 1,400 school board members, for the people from Vermont local communities who devote time for the improvement of education in the state of Vermont, is not a negative. It's a plus, and you guys should stop talking about it as a negative. That said, House Bill 361, Section 27, that's that 2% cap section on it. And it has two problems in it that I see that you folks really need to address. Conceptually, I'm okay with it. However, the 2% cap has to take into consideration any audited surpluses that were applied as revenues in the previous year, because that can really skew the change in in per pupil education spending, especially as you get to these smaller districts, where if they had a healthy surplus that they applied against taxes one year, the following year they may not have that surplus, and that will have the effect of appearing to increase spending where not it wasn't necessarily increased. And the other part is the no borrowing for operations part of that Section 27. There's a lot of districts where, you know, somebody comes in or a family moves in midway through the year and you have some really huge expenses that come due on the district. And for us to not be able to borrow means that we have to be given the ability to lay off staff regardless and notwithstanding any contractual agreement otherwise. School board will have to have the ability to lay off staff without any compensation in order to stay with that no borrowing for operations clause.
Okay. Let me have Dave comment. Thank you, Ram. I appreciate it.
So we do expect that the Ways and Means Committee will look more closely at the cap proposal. We put the concept in there, and they have the expertise in fashioning this in an equitable way. It's interesting, the taking into account surpluses. I think we did not do that, and I will pass that along to the Ways and Means Committee. And the same might apply to carryover deficit from the previous year. The reason that no borrowing is in there is because we are trying to reduce or eliminate gaming the system as much as possible.
244-1777 is our local number. Toll free 877-291-8255. Rama didn't specifically allude to it, but I was hearing special ed when he was asking that question too. So what did this bill, if anything, do for trying to keep down or do something about the cost of special ed?
So I very much wanted to have in the bill a different way of paying for special ed. There are some exciting things happening in schools out there. The SWIFT program is one of them. Different ways of allocating personnel that would require different ways of paying for special ed. We were supposed to get a study back from UMass on the use of paraprofessionals in January. It didn't come. It's not coming till March. So the combination of not having good information and prevented us from really putting in the bill what we would like to have put in the bill. Instead, we put in the bill a requirement that the Agency of Education come back next year with an alternative funding methodology for special ed. We think that in general, paying a flat ADM figure, a grant across the state, a block grant, if you will, for every student in the state that will allow school districts, particularly larger school districts, to better disperse personnel in order to handle special ed needs better. And in particular, students who don't quite meet the standards of special ed but require extra work on the part of school districts, and that's an extra cost. So we hope that we can move in a direction that is away from this reimbursement model that we have now that may encourage some not so great practices to a model that encourages better practices and reimburses school districts appropriately.
I'm talking with Representative Dave Sharp. Let's head back to the phone. We go to Starksboro. Rich, good morning.
Good morning, Mark, and good morning, Representative Sharp. I was listening to your discussion on this bill that just came out of your committee. I was curious whether you took any testimony relating to the how the learning environment will be affected by combining all these various towns. Like, for instance, I grew up in Springfield, some of Mark's earlier Vermont stomping ground, and we had the Springfield Cosmos and the Bellows Falls Terriers, and those were a very big sports rival team. I just couldn't imagine putting those two schools together in the same building.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Thank you.
That's interesting. Okay.
So that's an interesting comment. Yeah, it'll require more cooperation. And in our school district, in your backyard, Rich, Virgins and Bristol, two, like, school districts that have sports teams that have had tremendous rivalry over the past, similar to the one you referred to down near Springfield. And they have recently combined to form one football team. So I think once we expand our sense of community, and I think this is happening with our mobility in my district in Addison Northwest, we think of ourselves as a five-town area with virtually everything except schools. Schools are divided into these town districts. And I think as we move towards these larger districts, we're going to enlarge our sense of community. The Constitution, after all, and the Brigham decision reminded us of this, is we're responsible for educating all the students in the state, not just the kids in our town. So this isn't about my town or your town or this small school or that small school. We are responsible to educate all of the students in the state to the best of our ability in an equitable manner. And I think that larger school districts will move in the direction of doing a better job.
I love how this idea that maybe it's the sports and the kids that could actually lead these communities to get together and, you know, really cooperate.
The kids
kind
are...
Sports is a real groundbreaker.
It is, and, you know, we had students and teachers. We've had testimony from virtually every part of the educational system, school board members and citizens. And the kids, they think this is a no-brainer. You know, why it should be bigger school districts.
Okay. Let me take another call here. Let me go to Plainfield. Bob, good morning. How's it going?
Not so bad. Not so bad at all. I had a question, and I don't know the answer to this, and I thought I'd sound to a few fellows. If you allowed school choice where the money followed the student, would a consolidation eventually evolve?
Ooh, that's like a riddle. What a good question. Yeah.
So my perspective on vouchers is that it bifurcates the school system, and I think we see this in some of the southern states. Is what you have is you have some voucher that that might be similar to the foundation formula that was that we used to have. Let's say it's $10,000 per pupil. So that's basically the state support for per pupil spending at the moment. So let's say we give every family in the state $10,000 for each one of their pupils to go spend it wherever they want for education. So that means that families of means can choose to go to, you know, Burr and Burton and St. Johnsbury and Sharon Academy and Phillips Exeter in New Hampshire and the high class, high powered, well-funded schools, and it may cost them an extra $10,000. In fact, we took testimony, we got an email about a student currently that they're going to one of these private schools. It costs $33,000. Our Vermont taxes are paying $13,000 of it. The student is getting a scholarship for $13,000, and the family's coming up with $10,000. Well, that's fine for a family of means. They can afford to send their kid to the very best education the nation has to offer. But kids that don't have means, the kids that we're already not doing a particularly good job with, are kids from low-income families that are eligible for free and reduced-price lunch. They're going to go to the scraps. And, you know, there are people that believe that that's the way it ought to be, you know, that's why you become of means, so that you can afford to give these things to your kids. But our Constitution requires us to have an equitable education for all our children, and I think the voucher system would not work.
Let me take a call from Bristol, and I'm sorry, is it Ken, Tim, help me here.
Yes. Yeah. One interesting comment by your guest is community property. When you make private property, and the child community property, allowing those school districts to raise money from private sources other than taxation would help eliminating this. This is Marxist and Leninism in my dictionary that's used by the Associated Press. So when you say that when you turn loose 1,400 school directors that demand yes votes and turn private homeowners and widows into private property and community. We have to understand community is a responsibility that can't be defined without vouchers and without a choice. And because somebody goes to Exeter, that doesn't mean he's going to be better than somebody that goes to Bristol Academy. Now, there's a major problem with making a community just devour private property. Now, how are we going to deal with it?
All right. Thanks for your call.
I'm not quite sure I understand the question. Maybe you can rephrase it for me, Mark.
Well, I'm not sure I can either, but it sounds as though he feels as though there's too much state involvement in education. Sounds as though he's somebody who, like the previous caller, would like to see this more just opened up.
So I think in order to do that, we have to change the state constitution. It's not an easy process. It can be done. But at the moment, the state requires, the constitution requires us to educate all of our children equitably. Now, we did put in the bill a study for adequacy, which is this concept of there is some number. 10,000, 15, 20, whatever the number is, there's some amount of money that if we gave it to every child in the state for their education, that would be adequate and that we would be satisfying the constitutional demands and we would be providing a good education for our children. So we did put that study in there. And I welcome it because I think that the study is going to come up with a number that is significantly higher than what people might think. If you look, for example, at what our four academies are spending per pupil, and I think they do an excellent job. I visited both Burr and Burton and St. Johnsbury Academy, and I think they're fantastic schools. I wouldn't hesitate to send my kid to either one of those schools. But I think they're in fact spending in the realm of $17,000 to $19,000 per pupil. Their information is proprietary, so they don't have to reveal. Mm-hmm. But just in conversation, I think that's the sort of size of a problem as far as they're concerned in terms of spending money for an adequate education. So if that's true and we're going to spend $18,000 per pupil and give kids a voucher for that amount of money, that's a whopping state increase in tax dollars.
Thank you for your time this morning. I appreciate it very much.
You're welcome.
Representative David Sharp is the chair of the House Education Committee. We'll take a quick break. Coming up next, we'll talk with the Senate Majority Leader, Senator Phil Baruth, back at the State House right after this.
There's no time like now to drive a new Nissan. And Formula Nissan in Barrie has received special shipments direct from the factory with Nissan Now sale event discounts. Jack Castellaneta, nobody has these savings and nobody makes it simpler to save money.
With our factory direct pricing, you can forget the sticker, forget dealer markups, and just get the best Nissan price. We make it simple.
And you're not kidding. Formula Nissan prices beat flyer ads, newspapers, even internet pricing.
There's a reason people drive from Hardwick, Burlington, even St. Jay and White River Junction. Our prices are simple, and simpler means cheaper.
Up to $6,000 right off the MSRP of brand new Nissans. All the selection you need and simple, straightforward, factory direct pricing that will save you thousands.
No matter where you've been or what you've been offered, you'll do better at Formula Nissan during the Nissan Now sales event. We're on the Montpelier Road next to Pizza Hut and at formulanissan.com. Let us show you how easy it is to do business here.
It's no secret, Mihuron Supermarket is a great place to shop. I'm Tom Mihuron. For over seven decades, Mihuron's has been catering to the needs of the Mad River Valley and beyond. We have custom-cut meats, fresh produce and seafood, regular and organic grocery, locally produced foods galore, topped off by an extraordinary wine and beer department and a state liquor agency. Shop Mihuron Supermarket, Village Square Shopping Center, Waitsfield.
Ruben and his team from RB Technologies on Route 14 in East Montpelier has been creating and supporting thoughtfully designed, custom-crafted computer networks for their clients since 1997. Here's Marsha Curtis from Capital Steel.
He's our IT specialist. We go to him for everything that we need for the computer systems, our security systems, our perception monitoring. If we've got a question about our email, a computer, Windows, any kind of situation that we run into, we run to Ruben. Oh, his customer service is great, along with being extremely professional. They're very personable. It's not like somebody sitting in here and talking a bunch of computer speak to you. They actually listen. They answer your questions in English, which is really good. And they don't look at you like you're absolutely crazy. You know, when you say, my computer is making this really strange picture or whatever it's doing. And they always seem to come up with a solution. It's really great. It works really well for us.
RB Technologies cares about their customers. Online at rbtechvt.com. RB Technologies, efficiency through technology.
All right, we're back broadcasting live at the State House in Montpelier this morning, and we're going to continue our discussion about all issues that are important here. Let's give a nice warm radio from out welcome to the Senate Majority Leader, Phil Baruth. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mark.
So thank you for not calling me last night on the difference between Willie Loman and Willie Sutton. Wow, how did I whiff on that one? Willie Sutton, of course, is the one that robs the banks. He said, go to where the money is.
And Willie Loman is the guy of whom it was said, no one dast blame this man.
Okay.
Just a salesman out there trying to do his best on a shoestring and a smile.
So I should have just stuck with that last night on TV and not tried to change it and just full all in. All in is like now the new phrase around here when it comes to everything.
I'm all in. I'm all in for DEV. That's
okay. All right, me too. Let's talk about where things are at here. When you head home to Chittenden County, you're going to tell your constituents in Chittenden County that you've done what for them in the past 8 weeks?
Well, for me, mostly my work has been on economic development and on education. And I'll start with education. If people weren't watching the show we did last night, then they don't know, or I guess you just had Dave Sharp on. You probably went over the bones of the bill that the House passed out. Education is a place where we need to do something significant, and we need to do it now. And I believe voters gave us that message. The House did great work on governance last time around because our system is fantastically complex. It's very difficult to understand, and that complexity, in a way, makes it expensive. So what we're looking to do is reduce that complexity, get economies of scale, and without hopefully touching people's small schools, work on small districts, which have all of the administrative layers that you would expect for a larger district. And if we can do all of those things, we should be able to increase opportunity for kids. We had testimony from a lot of teachers where they're not providing foreign languages in their small schools. Mm-hmm. They can't. If they join with other small schools in a larger district, they should be able to provide more opportunity and save money. And that's the basic goal behind both the House bill, I think, and our bill.
You know, it sounds like kids may be traveling really far here, that in order to get those economy of scales, that there's something that almost gives on the other end here.
Right. Well, I'm from Burlington, and in Burlington there's the idea that you should have a neighborhood school that you can walk to. And that's a lovely idea.
Yeah.
But you gotta be able to afford it. So for quite a while, we worked on the idea of whether we should close one of our Burlington schools. We wound up instead creating magnet academies, and that's been very successful.
They're the two most popular schools in Burlington.
Exactly. So absent an idea like that, if a small school isn't able to keep enrollment up, and if they're in a town where their common level of appraisal is going down, the value of the property is going down, then their tax rate is exploding. And if their enrollment is going to continue to go down over the next 10 years, it's going to get worse and worse. So what we're saying is that now is the time for everybody to take a fresh look at what can be done with larger governance units without, again, giving up your small school necessarily. But to go back to your question about transportation, I do think that's an issue. There, you know, we're a mountainous state, so if you're going to put people in a larger district, there is the chance there that somebody might have to travel further to go to school. There's no reason why we can't put that consideration in the plans that, because the way the House bill stands, communities would come up with plans to create these larger districts. Those plans would ultimately be submitted for approval to the Secretary of Education and the State Board. And one of the elements we could say is that we don't want children traveling for more than, say, a half an hour on the bus to their school.
Well, geez, you do that in Burlington.
Well, you know, when I was growing up, I went to school and I was on the bus 45 minutes there and 45 minutes back. I never thought I was not privileged. I never thought I was being burdened by that. On the other hand, if people think a half an hour was enough, I think that would make sense.
You know, Dave was actually mentioning something I'd never heard of, which is that this isn't just for smaller districts, but could be for larger districts, too. He even talked about the idea of Burlington and South Burlington merging into one district.
Theoretically, I mean, one of the things that you're doing is you're creating a minimum average daily membership, so a minimum number of students enrolled on an average day. So in the House bill last year, it was 1,250, I think.
Uh-huh.
This year, I believe they settled on 1,100. So if it was 1,100 was the minimum, then Burlington would has more than that. Montpelier has about that many. So there are plenty of districts that are already at that minimum size who wouldn't be affected by that particular provision.
Do you think there are enough incentives in this to that this is going to work, that these districts are going to be able to do this on their own, or are they going to have the Department of Education come in and do the dirty work here?
I think it's all of the above, because there will need to be, you know, if you just think about it, you know, for a second, that you're going to take your school district, which is pretty complex if you've ever been on a school board, and you're going to join it with three others. There's a lot of detail there. You may need a legal opinion. You may need an accountant. You may need a lawyer to look at your property. So those are costs that these districts are going to bear. So in the bill that we're working on in Senate Ed, we're going to, before we get to the idea of incentives, financial incentives, we're going to have money to defray some of those costs. Then in terms of incentives, I think the idea... That's great. For those who don't have the headphones on, we just had a strange thing go through the headphones. But in any event, if you're going to provide financial incentives, I think you can't, if you're, number one, making it mandatory, then incentivizing it is sort of, we're kind of past that, right? The incentives writ large were to convince communities to do this before the breaking point.
Right.
Now that we're at the breaking point and we're saying more communities have to do this, then I don't think so much in terms of incentivizing people as in defraying some of their mandatory costs. Mm,
okay. All right. Let's head down to Rutland. Beth, good morning. How's it going?
Hey, Mark. Pretty good. I was wondering if...
You have a question for our guest?
Yes. Yes. I was wondering if anybody had discussed Vermont Interactive Television. I mean, some of these children are on the bus for a long, long time. And I would rather, if I had a child, I would rather have them sitting in front of Vermont Interactive Television for a couple of their periods instead of being on the bus forever. So I'll hang up and listen. And I know it would be a lot of money at the outset, but it might be worth it in the long run. So thank you. Have a good weekend.
All right. Thank you.
So I think the caller's absolutely right that technology is going to be one of the tools we use to address this problem. So my daughter right now takes one of her courses at Burlington High School online, and she does that at the school. She logs into a system where it clears her into this educational format, and she gets her instruction that way for one class. So I can see that, and I can see that helping. But I am myself a teacher, and I will maintain for as long as you want to anybody you want that online instruction is not as good as person-to-person instruction. And it's a long argument, and it has to do with the fact that I think people learn better from face-to-face contact, but also the fact that online classes, there are problems with security, there's problems with attention span. You have no way of knowing really how involved the person on the other end is.
Right.
And then assessment is itself hard. You know, UVM and other universities run online classes. They don't have any way of knowing actually whether the person who's taking the exam online is the person they believe it to be.
Mm.
So, you know, if I'm
wow.
the girlfriend of this guy who can't pass math and I'm fine with math, there's no reason why I can't take his exam for him as the current system is constructed. So I think technology is fine, but we have to be careful and I would hope sparing in how we use that to replace personal interaction.
Hmm. Biometrics. Got to
exactly.
be like an eye
That's
thing or something.
That's one possibility.
Yeah. But then there's that James Bond movie where somebody, they remember they took the eye out of the Air Force lieutenant colonel
and used
to get in
yeah,
the secret.
There was room. Also that James Bond movie where the guy cut people's heads off with his hat.
That's right.
So I'd be... we could look into that as well.
Let's talk about the state budget here. Maybe we could shave a little bit off the top of those numbers, too. Actually, let's do this. We're going to take a short commercial break. We'll come back, continue our discussion with the Majority Leader, Senator Phil Baruth. We'll be back right after these important announcements.
We are high performance, low pressure. You've all been waiting for the President's Day event at Walker Volkswagen on the Barrie Montpelier Road. Wait no longer for your new European-styled, German-engineered Volkswagen. Lease an award-winning Volkswagen Passat for only $149 per month, or a Volkswagen Jetta for $125 a month with $1,999 down. Walker Volkswagen's great selection and deeply discounted upfront prices make your next car so affordable. Passat and Jetta models offer clean-burning TDI technology, delivering an impressive 45 miles per gallon. Even the popular Sportwagen is on sale. Over 30 in stock, discounted $4,000 off from MSRP. Passats leasing for $149 or Jettas for $125 a month or $4,000 discounts on sport wagons. This was worth waiting for. The President's Day event at Walker Volkswagen on the Barrie Montpelier Road. Stop by, call, or click walkervt.com. Hurry in because all the excitement ends March 2nd. 36-month, 30,000-mile lease to qualified buyers. Tax title registration acquisition fee extra. First month's payment due at signing. See dealer for details.
Thinking about doing some projects on your home? A home improvement loan from Granite Hills Credit Union is the answer. It's quick and easy. Borrow up to $10,000 with this personal loan at a great fixed low rate. No appraisal or title search required. Remodel your kitchen, replace your roof, or add a room. You decide. Looking to do a larger project? We have home equity loans with new lower rates or a line of credit that allows the flexibility of check writing. Give us a call, stop in, or visit us at granitehills.org to find out how you can make your remodeling dreams come true.
Granite Hills Credit Union is an equal housing lender and is federally insured by the NCUA.
On to the ECACE semifinals for the Norwich University Cadets. I'm George Cummo. The Cadets play host to their rivals from Rutland County, the Castleton State Spartans, on Saturday night at Kreitzberg Arena. And this is the place to be listening for all the action. Join Corey Gustafson and me. Norwich and Castleton, Saturday night, ECACE semifinal action on the Northfield Savings Bank, WPEV Norwich Hockey Network.
The State House in Montpelier, you can join us on the phone at 244-1777. That's our local number. Toll free, you can reach us at 877-291-8255. I was talking earlier this morning with Senator Jay Kitchell, the chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee. Wow, I mean, she's really kind of beside herself trying to deal with
yes.
all these cuts. And I mean, everywhere she goes, she feels like there's incredible resistance. Is this really doable to close this big a gap?
Yes, absolutely. my first year in the Senate in 2011, we had a $100 million gap. The difference here is that the governor proposed a budget to close the gap that was extremely tough and was going to require all sorts of sacrifice from every quarter. And then we had another cost downgrade of $18 million,
right,
which I believe now is a little less than that. But still in all, when you've cut everything to the bone and then you've started to saw into the bone, and then somebody says, find $18 million plus, that's what's got people pulling their hair out.
Mm-hmm. So what's this going to look like at the end of this session? I mean, what should people anticipate? That they're going to get less of what?
Well, I could show you. Senator Kitchell handed out on the floor a handout of many pages with a series of ideas. And it goes through every department of government. It looks at small line items, large line items. Some of the biggest ideas that people are kicking around involve things on the order of closing the Springfield prison. Now, if you...
The Windsor one.
The Windsor one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you've ever been in a prison, you know it's like a small city. And to think about shuttering that just to get out of the budget gap this year, and as well as perhaps produce savings down the road, that's the scale of budget address we're talking about.
And that was only $1.5 million.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm somehow had this fantasy that somehow there was going to be a lot more, but obviously those prisoners have got to go somewhere else.
Well, and you know, even large things, you know, the proposal to legalize marijuana has been surfacing ever since Washington and Colorado legalized, but it's obviously picked up speed because of the Rand report and because Alaska just legalized. But, you know, if we were to do that and we went full bore and decided to throw caution to the wind and we were just going to do it and maximize revenue, you're still, they're only going to pick up $11 million, which is no small chunk of money, but in the context of $120 million, which is what we're trying to close, it becomes just a component, you know, and a minor component.
Yeah. The senator said she didn't think really the public had a clue how hard this was going to hit. Do you think they do? You guys probably don't even know. And if you guys don't know, then how are they going to know?
Good point. What I would say is that there was a fairly broad-based outcry last time to reduce the property tax. And I think people are focused on that one number. They're not necessarily focused on the services that they receive from government. And I can hear, you know, in my mind, some of your viewers saying, I don't get any government services. But, you know, if you drove on a road today, we are paying a lot this winter. If you've followed the costs that we're putting into the roads, this extreme cold and the snowfall we've received, we are way over what we normally use to maintain the roads in terms of resources. So that's got to come from somewhere. You know, gas prices are down, and so immediately people begin thinking, should a gas tax be expanded in times when people aren't throwing $4 a gallon into their tank? So all of these are questions that have to be doped out, run through the financial side of our operation here so that we're sure we know what we're doing. And then there's a whole huge political lift to each particular piece.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, the state employees,
right,
the governor baked into his budget between $10 and $11 million that's going to come from essentially a give back from the state employees. They are fighting that because they negotiated their contract in good faith and they believe that's their due. So that in and of itself, even if that was the only thing on the table,
mm-hmm,
that would be enough to throw people into spasms in both chambers. And that's going to be multiplied by 25 because it's going to take at least 25 such issues to close this budget gap.
Wow. I mean, that sounds overwhelming to me.
Right. Well, you know,
I mean, it sounds worse the way you just described it than even 5 minutes ago.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes, you know, you stop to get a sandwich somewhere and somebody knows you're in the legislature and they say, why would you want to do that job? And I always say, oh, it's it's fun, you know, I get a lot out of it and everything. And then I get in my car with my sandwich and I'm like, why do I want to do this job? Because, you know, it is, there's a reason why the president's hair turns white. And I don't care who it is, whether it was Carter, Clinton, Reagan, Obama. You look at them after 4 years, they're gray as can be.
Right.
And it'll age you for sure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Are you aging
yes,
in this job?
You've noticed.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure. You haven't said anything, which is good. But.
The payroll tax. What's the mood of the Vermont State Senate on this payroll tax that the governor's proposed?
Well, and just to clarify, I think I misstated this last night when we spoke.
Oh, you Willie Lohman did?
I Willie Lohman did.
What'd
last
you
night.
Misstate?
In other words, I was thinking about the cost shift. And not the piece of it that the administration is earmarking for closing budget gap.
Right. Okay. I corrected you on that. That's
exactly.
Okay. Live. That's
but,
okay.
But I'm man enough to say that I made a mistake.
See, that's what I would have gone back and said. You know, that Willie Lohman thing? You had the wrong guy, dude.
So, for people who aren't following this, the governor proposed under a percent, 0.7, 0.75, payroll tax, and that would hit everybody who's producing a payroll in the state from the smallest to the largest. School districts would pay this, IBM, Global Foundries would pay it, as would your convenience store that's on the corner. So obviously there's opposition from, you know, the usual quarters to any kind of tax, especially a tax on business. But the essence of the argument is that once you begin taxing that way, mm-hmm. once you begin taxing payroll for the cost shift, it'll wind up getting used for other purposes as well, and it will get expanded in the future. So the administration has been the prime mover behind that idea. They've been trying to convince people that they will be responsible about not raising it in the future and using it to address what they say they're going to address. I would say that both chambers were cool to the idea 2 months ago. They have warmed as other things get thrown on the table, and as we talked about, don't go anywhere. You know, you close the prison, and there's 1.5 million when you were hoping for 20. So pretty soon people get at their wits' end, and they begin going back to ideas that didn't seem to have any life before.
Mm-hmm. What have I not asked you about? What's an issue I've not asked you about that you're going to brag about or be able to have something positive to say?
Well, winning in 2010, that's something I like to
that you're going to gloat. You're going to go back and gloat about something, a win that you had 4 years ago that was widely predicted.
My win?
Yeah.
No, you and everybody else poo-pooed it. Right? Am I right?
Thanks for reminding me. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, no, you're talking about legislative achievements that we'll go home
death about. Of a talk show host.
That we go home and brag about. Mark Lohman. Well, I'll just give you a relatively small bore thing that my committee has done, economic development, and that's our rent-to-own bill.
Okay, yeah.
So Aaron's and Rent-A-Center and other rent-to-own operations in Vermont, you know, they're a part of our business economy, and, you know, they make on the order of, you know, 5 million gross a year. And that's important to us. However, if you've ever looked into the rent-to-own industry, you know that there are persistent complaints that harassment techniques are being used, that people are being duped into contracts that will ultimately cost them 2.5, 3, 4 times the value of the merchandise. So we looked into all those complaints, and we have nearly finalized a bill that will do a couple of useful things. One is it will cap the amount that Rent-A-Center or Aaron's or whoever can charge for the merchandise overall, and we've got rid of the harassment, hopefully.
Thanks for your time this morning. I appreciate it. Senator Philip Baruth is the Senate Majority Leader. We're going to take a break here for news. Back for hour number two. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, AM 550 WDEV Waterbury Montpelier. News is coming your way next.
AP Radio News.